The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
The Final Furlong Podcast is proudly brought to you by our official betting partner, Kaluki Sportsbook. With betting on all sports, immediate interaction with experienced traders, instant withdrawals, and the best odds guaranteed on UK and Irish horse racing, Kaluki have prominent betting pitches at racecourses across the UK. Join us now at kalukisportsbook.co.uk. And the Final Furlong is brought to you by our official syndicate partner, All About Sunday, the ultimate racehorse ownership experience. Download the app to get involved with world-class trainers, including Henry de Bromhead, Gordon Elliott, and Donald McCain. Join us at allaboutsunday.com. And now, get busy listening and get busy winning. Here's your host, Emmett Kennedy.
And it's great to have your company as we are joined for the first time on the show by Michael Willoughby. Willow, welcome along to the Final Furlong Podcast.
Hello, Matt. How are you doing?
I am good. I'm good, thank God. Great to get your insight. Great to get your views on some of the recent racing. You're going to give us an assortment of two-year-olds to keep a very close eye on and to be backing with a view to sweeping all the money out of Kaluki's satchel. So no pressure on you with that list a little bit later on. But speaking of star two-year-olds, Little Big Bear absolutely bolted up in the Keeneland Phoenix Stakes. And this is the first Group 1 of the season for two-year-olds, and it was definitely the most telling two-year-old performance of the season as well. Just the 7 lengths he wins by. Unfortunately, we're going to lose Bradsell for the rest of the season, and obviously he didn't show anything like what he's capable of, but you can only beat what's in front of you, and he's beaten the 110-rated Persian Force and 106-rated Chartash out of sight. What was your impression of Little Big Bear and what he can now do for the rest of the campaign?
It was a monster performance, if I'm perfectly honest with you, and it's hard not to be very taken when a horse wins a Group 1 by 7 lengths. Obviously, a couple of Group 2 winners in behind in Bradsell and Persian Force. And in doing so, he managed to get an RPR of 1.22, which is the highest racing post rating of any of the last 10 winners of the race. And I'd say it was a performance that would put him in the conversation with the best juveniles of recent years. If you speak of Pinatubo, Too Darn Hot, Native Trail, I would certainly have him in the conversation off of that performance. He was wildly impressive, obviously, but I think you have to question whether a few horses have underperformed. I wasn't overly impressed with Persian Force's July Stakes win. I thought that was a backward step from his Coventry run. I think he's most probably regressed a little bit further here. So I'm happy just to take the view that Persian Force just was simply not good enough. And obviously there's a clear excuse for Bradsell as well. He missed the break, was rushed up to get a prominent position and didn't see his race out. He's obviously now missing the rest of the season with a setback. So when you look at it, you have got a 7-length winner, but one of his main rivals has come back injured. Another one of them was a non-runner and potentially one on a bit of a decline. I don't want anyone to think that I'm not saying that Little Big Bear was incredible or couldn't go on to be a really, really talented 2- and 3-year-old. But if you did want to poke holes in his performance, that those would certainly be the ones. As for where he could go for the remainder of the season, Aidan O'Brien's basically said that he could go anywhere. I think even the Nunthorpe was spoken about straight afterwards, which was quickly brushed under the carpet. But I'd imagine the National Stakes will be his next target and an obvious one as they look to stretch him out to see if he can get that mile with a guinea, with the guineas obviously for next year. If they wanted to and they did take that route for the National Stakes, then that'd give him a month or so until the Dewhurst or the Virtan Futurity, whichever way they wanted to take it. Really, really impressive. I imagine 7 furlongs will be next for him, and I'll be excited to see that race for sure.
What do you think of his prospects of staying 7 furlongs this season? Because and that's interesting. Just the very way you've, even before I've got the question out, you're like, because obviously he was 16-1, 14-1 for the 2,000 guineas before this race. He's now 5-1 with Kaluki Sportsbook. So you're not exactly there's no real meat left on the bone now. Look, if you've got that price, fair play to you. I was probably more of, well, I was more of the mindset to be looking elsewhere beforehand. Now you're forced to if you're going to have a bet in the 2,000 guineas. But if you've got that 14s, you're in a really good spot. But he needs to stay. So to be able to get 7 furlongs, what do you think of his opportunity to do that in the national stakes when the opposition is going to get tougher as well?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you asked, because I do see him as a speedball. I think he's a much quicker horse. I'm not someone who looks too much into times or stride distances and so on and so forth, but I have seen a few of those sectional experts go on to say that, yeah, this horse strides out like he would get a mile, and he did his best work late on. So you'd imagine even 7 furlongs won't be an issue for him. He is by no name never. He's a half brother to 10 sovereigns. Obviously, if you look at him, he was pushed out to the mile, ran admirably in a guineas, but ultimately won his group one over 6 furlongs. I imagine you'd get something similar to Little Big Bear with Little Big Bear, a completely different horse trained by someone completely different. But we look at Perfect Power. His class allowed him to win the Greenham over 7 furlongs and run well in a guineas. But ultimately, 6 furlongs is his trip. I would lean to the side that he's going to be better as a sprinter. But just looking at the way Aidan O'Brien operates, you'd imagine they're going to stretch him out to a guineas, whether or not, you know.
Yeah, 10 Sovereigns was out of an Exceeding Excel mare, so it was really bred for speed. Not just saying that because the hat is here in the studio, by the way. He's out of Adventure Seeker, so it's slightly different in that regard. But when you do look at his pedigree, I mean, look, he's a looker on camera. I haven't seen him in person. I suppose I could have gone up to the Curragh on Saturday. Oh, I couldn't have, actually. I was broadcasting. But I could have gone up one of the other days. I just didn't. As much as I enjoy going up there, for all the times I've bashed it, it's our premier race course. But I can understand why, and I've read some of those stride analysis pieces as well about how, based on his stride analysis, he'll stay. The thing about stride analysis is it's great, and I find it very informative, and I'm a little bit like you. I don't tend to go overly enthusiastic about times. I have my method, and it doesn't always work. But hey, when it does, that's great. For analyzing what a horse can do, though, I want to try and get as much of the information as I possibly can. And for that instance, I think that sectional times and stride analysis is very interesting. It's all theory, though. You know, until the horse actually goes and does it, you don't know. And the truth is, Aidan O'Brien doesn't even realize whether or not this horse is going to stay or not. And you mentioned George Washington. And it's really interesting to see that this performance on RPRs, at least, is ahead of Master Craftsman George Washington. It's ahead of Native Trail. It's ahead of Pinatubo outside of the National Stakes, best since Johannesburg. Like, that's extraordinary when you consider what the racing posts are saying this horse has achieved. But I do remember Aidan O'Brien saying that he would not believe George Washington would stay a mile until he actually did it. So, and George Washington was bred to be out and out to be a miler, but that was his line. I don't know he'll get it until he actually stays the distance. And there's something about the No Nay Nevers that until they do it, I need to see it as well. I mean, No Nay Never was a very precocious horse, Group 1 winning juvenile, Royal Ascot winning juvenile, you know, an extremely talented stallion, of that there's no question. But I do need to see his progeny actually go and win a classic before I'll believe they'll do it. And so the 5-1, 4-1 that's currently being offered now, it doesn't appeal to me in the slightest. If you've got the 14s, you're loving life. If you're considering unloading the clip now to get stuck into him, I think you need to hold that tough. But like George Washington, there were plenty of people who were saying that his form had more holes in it than Swiss cheese. And that didn't really hold water when it came Guineas Day. He absolutely bolted up, and he went on to win the QE2 afterwards as well. So the visual impression that he's created is going to live long in the memory. It is by far the best two-year-old performance I've seen this season. I'm very excited by him. I think that he's a monster. I have zero interest in backing him for the Guineas. Doesn't mean he can't win it. Doesn't mean he won't stay a mile. But I don't know if I'd want to be backing him for the Vincent O'Brien National Stakes, let alone for a classic. So there's a lot more water to go underneath this bridge, and there's a lot more that Little Big Bear has to prove before I'm prepared to crown him European champion juvenile. For all that, he's probably going to get that mantra. Presumably, if he wins the National Stakes, he will go for the Dewhurst, and winning three Group 1s would be incredible. But again, you need to see that. And I think your assessment of him being a speedball, that's pretty much where I am with him now as well.
You have to remember that Aidan O'Brien deemed him fast enough to send him to the Windsor Cast. Now, I know that isn't the strongest race at Royal Ascot, but it is a 5 furlong contest. And the form has worked out tremendously well as well. At least early on as a 2-year-old, they saw him more as a quick horse than a sprinter.
Yeah, the other aspect of that was Blackbeard was supposed to go here, and part of the reason that Little Big Bear went for the Windsor Castle was that they had at the time Age of Kings, who they thought was quite good, and Blackbeard to go for the Coventry. So they already had two horses, and Aidan, he made the point of saying that on the final furlong, that the reason, he said, we're either going to go for the Coventry or we're going to go for the Windsor Castle. Right now, we're leaning towards the Windsor Castle, and that's because we want to split these horses up. So the Antarctic was going for the Norfolk, and they were sending Meditate / Statuette was going to go for the Fillies race. It was all part of splitting these horses up and dividing them, going for the Chesham with Alfred Munnings. There was a plan in place. But you are right to highlight that, look, he's not going to run him in that race unless he thinks he's fast enough. I do remember watching that race back and being really blown away by the drone footage that ITV had. Because when you watch the drone, the overhead shot, if I could use my mouth words correctly, when you watch the overhead shot of Little Big Bear and how he quickened up through the field that day, you really get a proper, and I don't know if you've seen that footage or not, but you really get to really appreciate how powerful his turn of foot was and his change of gear was that day to be able to quicken up. And the winning distance wasn't so much as big a story as, what did he win by that day? A neck? He beats Rocket Robbie by a neck. It wasn't exactly like breathtaking in terms of the winning position, but the visual impression, I remember breaking that down on the show afterwards with Oisin Murphy and talking about just how impressive that visual was, that this is clearly a horse who's got a really impressive turn of foot. And that was the thing that Oisin was saying, was fast turn of foot. And he's gone on to win his group race at the Curra by 4.5 lengths, and now he's group one by 7. So maybe he's getting stronger. Maybe he just continues to improve, and maybe there's no horse that can live with him at this stage. But the fact that we're even mentioning Johannesburg and Pinatubo as previous winners of this race does bring me back down to earth in that I don't think, for all the Pinatubo won a Group 1 as a 3-year-old, I don't think he trained on. I don't think he was anywhere close to as good as he was as a juvenile. And Johannesburg certainly didn't. So it may very well be that Little Big Bear is exceptional at 2, but that his class right now will come to his level because they'll grow up and they'll fill out over the winter and things will get a little bit harder for him by next year. But for now, certainly he's a horse to be excited by. And you can certainly dream about, but I'm not getting overly carried away.
I'd have to agree with that. And you have to look at these horses who comes to mind. Snowfall showed absolutely nothing as a 2-year-old, but went on to win an Oaks by however many lengths it was.
It was 97, wasn't it?
Felt like that, certainly. Horses catch up over the winter. They certainly do. And although Little Big Bear, who knows, it might get even better. There will be certainly horses, even in his own yard, that will catch up to him over that winter.
So Brad Sell's going to miss the rest of the season, which is a real blow. Because he was terrific in the Coventry, and that form has worked out very well. Little Big Bear's Windsor Castle form had worked out really well. The third horse, Shartash, came into this as a Railway Stakes winner, having beaten Bluegrass, who had gone on to win a Group 2 in France. The horse who was second to him, the Antarctic, had gone on to win a Group 3 in France. What did you make of Shartash's performance?
It's an interesting one because the watch from back the Railway Stakes, they all finished in a bit of a heap. Apache Outlaw was quite close up, and neither of them really ran too well in this race. I mean, no one other than Little Big Bear ran very well at all. I wonder if maybe a step up in trip might suit. But I think if you looked at all of them, you'd think they'd just been madly outpaced and could do have a step up in trip.
Yeah, I would agree. My first reading of it was, wow, that was stunning. Mm-hmm. And then the more I looked at it, the more I went, I don't think Chartash has stepped up here at all. I don't think he's performed anywhere even close to what he's capable of.
But as I just said, you could say that about literally every single horse in this field. And at what point do we then just credit Little Big Bear for being exceptional? Because it's like, can all of them really underperform by that much? I don't know.
Well, that's the one thing that makes me slightly nervous about this, in that it's very easy to go, well, they all haven't run except for Little Big Bear. Because you could easily do that with George Washington's Phoenix Win and go, well, he was brilliant and the rest just didn't turn up. And that wasn't how it transpired at all. You learn afterwards. I doubt very much, well, it would be extraordinary if he was to go and repeat a performance like this in the National Stakes. Whoever he faces that day, you imagine it should, at least in theory, be a strong field. Charlie Appleby's got a lot of strength and depth in his two-year-old division. I'm sure you'll have a few of those to mention later on.
Certainly.
And the one who won on King... I was going to say a name, and now I'm afraid I'm going to get it wrong. So instead, I'll just go with the...
About the wide margin Ascot winner.
On King George Day, yeah.
Is it Naval Power?
There you go. Yeah. Bolted up.
Yeah, absolutely.
He looks tailor-made to Group 1 company now. So... Look, the difference between him and Little Big Bear is Little Big Bear has done it in Group 1 company. Mm. But Naval Power hasn't had the opportunity to actually take that step yet, but he's about to. You know, in a month's time, he will get that opportunity. And those two facing off would be fascinating. Noble Style would be really interesting if he was to come over. There's a lot there that Charlie Appleby has to throw in against Little Big Bear. I'm sure Aidan O'Brien might throw something else into the mix as well. Maybe Blackbeard will actually rock up this time around. I think Blackbeard, on the basis of how this race transpired, probably finishes second. He probably does. But maybe that's a bit disparaging to Persian Force.
But I got the impression earlier on in the season that they thought Blackbeard was a better horse than Little Big Bear. But judging by what we saw this weekend, you'd have to say he'd have been playing for second place.
And sometimes that's the best way to have it, is that one of these horses is taking them by surprise, in that he's not really doing a whole lot at home, but once he gets to the track, it's a different story. And sometimes that's actually what you want in a racehorse to be a real star, and that it's good that this fella has emerged on the scene in the way that he has. But the fact that they could have run him in the Coventry, actively chose not to, because they favored Age of Kings. And do you remember the market move for Age of Kings that day? And yet it still held up with Blackbeard. He still went off favorite. But Age of Kings was pummeled from 8s down to 3-1. Jeez. Who has not gone on at all, by the way. So, look, I'm very intrigued as to how this pans out. This is by no means me saying he can't win the National Stakes or win the Guineas. But I have zero interest in taking odds on about him. On Irish Champions Weekend, and I don't have any interest in taking the 4-1 about him that's available now. Is that fair?
I'm going to come out and be a bit more punchy and say that he won't win a Guineas, but he'll win a Commonwealth Cup.
I love it. So Group 1 winning 3-year-old, yes, but not a classic winner. Oh, dear.
Avoid that 5-1. Avoid that 5-1.
Hit the lay button, or we'll unearth a classic winner for you a little bit later on, but... brace yourself now for May 2023.
You said in the final furlong he wouldn't win the Guineas.
Did you see that guy who was tweeting Godolphin John? I was like, I laid that horse to lose $5,000 on the basis of you saying that it was bad ground. What? Who in the name of God lays a horse to lose $5,000?
I was going to back him until you said that on Twitter.
Jesus Christ.
I must have missed that one, but I believe it entirely.
Oh my God. Because he actually, to be fair to John said, send me your address and I'll mail you the fiver. And he goes, it was $5,000 actually. Jesus Christ. Right, Group 1 racing continues, this time in France, where the The Arc Primorice de Geest Group 1 goes to Highfield Princess for John Quinn. I was a little bit surprised at this. Perfect Power was desperately disappointing. Back in 7th, Minzal finished 2nd. Garrus ran a huge race to be 3rd. Looked terrific for John Quinn and for Jason Hart. And Jason Hart was saying afterwards that John Quinn had targeted this race quite a while out with Highfield Princess, and that when he does that, they tend to hit the board. And she very much did.
It was a massive training performance, and it's not just the story of her rising from a mark of 57 2 years ago to winning a Group 1 this weekend. I think the stories can be a bit more current than that as well. She was beaten in 2 conditions races on the all-weather at the start of the season, and in one of those races, she was beaten by 2 horses right in the 80s. She looked almost gone at the game, so the fact that she won... I can't remember the name of it, the race at York by however many lengths in the Group 2, and then to win a Group 1 in the same season, it's a transformed horse. If you look at the performance quite isolated, she's beaten the right horses. Minzao is in 2nd. He's always threatened to win a big one. Rohan, Naval Crown, and Artorias, I think they've all ran respectably. You touched on Imperfect Power. I was a backer of him this weekend. Really disappointed. I believe they used the ground as an excuse. But back to the mare, all options are open, even maybe a trip on the dirt. She can go back to 5 furlongs, even go up to 7 furlongs. If she was mine, I'd be targeting the champion sprint. She ran really well in that race last year. That was her first time over 6 furlongs. And she was drawn on the wrong side of the track. So I think she's missed even a better horse this year as well. That's the way I'd go. But yeah, monster training performance.
It was terrific. And without wanting to sound patronizing, it is great to see John Quinn having Group 1 success as well. Look, it's nice to see the Aidan O'Briens and Charlie Appleby's winning Group 1 races, but it is also nice to see smaller trainers, if you like, with the greatest respect to John Quinn, who tends to bang in quite a bit of money in terms of profits, and his horses are running tremendously well too. And great for Jason Hart as well. And he gave her a terrific ride. They clearly had a plan, and he pulled it off to perfection. She's won it readily. The only thing I would say about this is that it does give you pause for thought about unloading the clip on anything in the 6 furlong division, because it's just there for the taking, really. Like, Naval Crown would have had a huge opportunity here, and he's only beaten in total 2.25 lengths in full. Artorias holds the form up, as you said. I was really disappointed with Perfect Power, just like you were, and I was a supporter of him as well in this race. I thought this was going to be ideal for him, particularly with the main man Sumion on board. But you do just have to take this sprinting division with a bit of a grain of salt.
Yeah, both the 6 furlong and 5 furlong divisions are really missing a star. And I suppose that's why I latched on to Perfect Power. Tremendous 2-year-old. Won the Commonwealth Cup really well. It's lacking somebody. And I'm looking through the division and I don't know who it is. And I feel like these horses are just going to be beating each other over and over and over again. And, you know, if you follow one of them, you must probably land on one correct at some point. Maybe it's Minzar's turn next.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up falling to somebody else, just with the way that this keeps going. But look, if the Australians decide to send Nature Strip back again next year, he should win the King Stand because he's that good. And without a superstar like him, I don't think you can trust Golden Pal. So without a superstar like him, who else is there? There isn't really anybody. So yeah, roll the dice and just keep on going. But well done. That doesn't take anything away from what she achieved. And it certainly doesn't take away from her success. It just means that there's a health warning in terms of betting on that division going forward.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Back to the 2-year-olds, and we talked about First Season Sires with Elena Cullen from the TDN on Monday, and First Season Stallion Sue Nation is in the winner's enclosure in the Group 3. We touched on her briefly as well, but to expand on her, for James Doyle, Charlie and Mark Johnston, I liked your chances beforehand, and this was a really solid performance from the daughter of Sioux Nation out of a Delhi Connemara.
I thought it was a weird race. I don't really know what to make of it. It didn't look the strongest of renewals, so I can see why you fancied Lakota Sioux prior to the race. And if you look at her entry, she's got an entry in the Moy Glare. Mm. I think she's got an entry in the Filly's Mile as well. I think she might struggle in those higher races. The main talking point's going to be about her swishing her tail around. I personally take a negative stance when a horse does that. I feel like they're not putting everything in. I wonder if maybe she just hit the front a bit too soon. But I mean, she swished her tail around in the Chesham as well, so it seems to be a characteristic of hers. But I think a more patient approach in a stronger race, and she might be able to pick up a place at best. But I wasn't entirely convinced on the form of the race.
She's fully entitled to go for a Group One now on the back of this, but I remember when I was getting into racing and like getting into actually betting on it, and I'd become obsessed with the sport, and I knew that I was going to be betting on it. So I was like, well, you can't keep losing money on this, so you better start learning about it, because otherwise you're screwed. And I remember reading an article about how horses, you can't trust horses who swish their tails. And reading up on this and trying to understand what this was all about, and why is this an indication of horses who can be a little bit ungenuine? What is it about horses that makes them do this? I have never seen a case as bad of swishing the tail as this one. It was it was like she had the window wipers on. That's what her tail looked like. It was like a massive window wiper on a Merc. It was ridiculous.
It didn't stop her though. If she had been beaten, you could have used it quite clearly as an excuse. But I mean, she was very tough and gutsy at the finish for sure.
Yeah, that is a fair point to make. I mean, she's run to the line in the end. She did wander about a good bit though.
Mm, she started off down the center of the track and ended up on the rail. I don't know if that was by devise or whether she did hang. Maybe James Doyle pulled her over himself. But yeah, no, I did notice that.
I think he said afterwards, it's not on my screen now, but I think he said that she hung both ways.
Mm.
I think I did read that afterwards. But listen, she stepped up on what she's done. And the entries were telling. And she had been behind Holloway Boy, at the Royal Meeting. He's come out and finished second since then. So it was good to see that race get a boost in form, because the Chesham was taking a bit of a pulming.
And it was.
We still haven't seen Alfred Munnings yet, so we don't know. I don't know about you, but I don't think he ran to his form that day. But he has to come out and show it again. And he's been entered up, but hasn't raced since. But she's an intriguing one, for sure. But that tail swishing is definitely intriguing. And the fact that he said that she hung both ways, is what he said. She did hang quite a bit across the track. And you're not going to get away with that in Group One company. But she's going to be intriguing to see going forward.
It does make you think that, you know, if they can iron out this tail swishing issue, I don't know how you go about that. And if she doesn't hang next time, then she could be well up to winning a race of a Group Two or even getting really competitive in a Group One. But it would definitely put me off looking to back her in a higher grade.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. Filly's Mile and the Moy Glare are the Group Ones that she has entries in. We'll go international again, this time to America, where Nation's Pride took the Caesars Saratoga Derby Invitational Stakes. Oh dear, Stonish. Nation's Pride ends up running out quite an impressive winner in the end, for all that he was driven out. He had been second on his previous stint to America behind Classic Causeway and manages to turn the form around here. I did think that Stone Age was going to be suited to this race. That whole Stone Age project hasn't really paid off at all. Another American winner for Charlie Appleby and William Buick.
It feels like when Buick and Appleby go over to America, they just don't miss. Or not just America, if they go overseas, it must be just brilliant race planning from Godolphin. And I think a massive shout out has to go to William Buick. It hasn't gone unmissed. in particular his ride on Nation's Pride, that the horse was held up for most of the race at Belmont under Frankie, but Bjørk was quick to shove him along this weekend and get a prominent position, and it looks like that move was the one that may have won in the race. Post-race comments, Charlie Appleby said they're likely to step Nation's Pride back up to 1 mile, 4 furlongs for the Jockey Club Derby in September. That was a race that Yabir won last year, so they know the sort of horse that that's needed to win that. And it makes sense why they rode him more prominently if they feel like he has stamina and abundance. Quickly touch on With the Moonlight as well. That was William Bjørk, Charlie Appleby's other horse, the day after. I couldn't find a plan for With the Moonlight on online, but I would suspect that all being well, she would go to the Jockey Club Oaks, because if you look at the way that Nation's Pride and With the Moonlight have been campaigned, it's been exactly the same. Listed winners at Newmarket first time out, disappointing in the Oaks or Derby respectively. Second over in over at Belmont, and then a month later that they both won at Saratoga. They've literally got the same CV, and I imagine they'll just keep following each other.
Yeah, it's insane to think that both would go over and win, and that both have gone the exact same trajectory as well. So we'll see what they do. Jockey Club Derby, I think, was mentioned.
Yeah, it's the Jockey Club Derby in September. Yeah,
and they won that last year with Yabir. So
that's the one. Yeah.
Well, we'll have to wait and see how all of that pans out. But Charlie Appleby's having an a season of all seasons. And thank you, Jerry Hannon, for the line that will never disappear ever. From
they always get stuck in my head.
For sure. Joseph Orion had the 1-2 in the Grant Thornton Ballyronan Stakes at Leopardstown last Thursday. Cleveland knew a newbie to his stable who has the Melbourne Cup as a name, but they're going to have to get more room on the plane now because Gear Up has surely booked his place down under as well.
Yeah, no, it was a nice performance from Gear Up, and it was good to finally see him get his head in front. It was 2 years without a win. He started the season well, over with a few okay performances. I imagine the trip was a bit short of his best. Joseph O'Brien has outlined the Caulfield Cup for that horse. So yeah, a mile and a half seems to really suit him a lot more than the 1 mile two. As we're on the topic and you already mentioned him, I think Cleveland is the more interesting of the two of them, especially if they do go for an adventure over in Australia. As noted, he finished second, but that's all he needed to do to get into the Melbourne Cup, is he needed to, need to be placed in group company. I thought that was a really, really good effort from Cleveland. I imagine they weren't pushing him to try and win the race even, given that they had the winner there and also only needed to place. I have him down as a real stayer. So the fact he was able to run so well over these middling distances is a massive positive. Best of luck, Connections, because I hope he makes it to the Melbourne Cup in one piece. I think he'll love the step back up to 2 miles.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I was more taken with him as well. And I'm intrigued about the whole thing of him being half retained by Coolmore and yet being moved from Aiden to Joseph. And if you think about it, for all that Aiden O'Brien is the world's leading trainer, Joseph's got this incredible record down under. You know, Aiden did send Highland Reel down there to win a Cox Plate, but Joseph continues to get the job done left, right, and center. Cox Plates, Melbourne Cups, copy, paste, Group 1, Grade 1 in Australia, Joseph O'Brien is able to go and win it. And obviously Lloyd Williams wanted to buy the horse. I'm sure that he would have paid whatever it was that was being asked within reason, but Coolmore went, no, we want to keep sharing him. And the decision was made to send him to Joseph, which is intriguing. He looks an out-and-out Melbourne Cup horse to me, particularly given the fact that he was able to stay in the Chester Cup. And Joseph also seems to be able to get the tactics of the racing in Australia spot on as well.
Yeah, that Chester Cup has really worked out. Obviously, the second being Coltrane. He's gone and he didn't disgrace himself in a Goodwood Cup even, but ran really well in Ascot Stakes. I was just having a look there. Cleveland currently only on a mark of 110. That is really tempting for a Melbourne Cup. I wonder what the next plan will be for him, what race they might try and delve into next.
It's going to be very interesting to see, do they put him in a Caulfield Cup or a Cox Plate? Do you go for a Group 1 race? Or do you just hope that he's... I mean, I assume he gets in. There's no reason to think that he won't.
No.
And he's what? He's currently a 16-1 shot for the Melbourne Cup? You can get 20s. Jeez, I think 20s is...
That's... Bad. As soon as we get off this call, I'll be having a little play on that. That is for sure. Because yeah. I've backed me pretty much all of his starts this season, Cleveland. I've been all of his starts after the Chester Cup. I really think he could turn up even to be a group horse.
Yeah, and I'd forgiven the Royal Ascot defeat as well, because I think he may just have been feeling the effects of that race in the Chester Cup.
Mm. I wondered if he'd be better on softer ground. I'm not sure if he's guaranteed to get that in a Melbourne Cup, but that was rattling fast at Ascot. And he definitely handled it, but he might be better on a softer surface.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of positives about him, and the 20s. Is going to be getting a little bit of investment from both of us by the sounds of things. Right, let's talk about two-year-olds to watch out for. So this is something I'm very intrigued by. Who have you got for us? Take it away, my friend. I'm busy typing away and not trying to take that 20s about Cleveland in the Melbourne Cup.
I've got three for you. I don't think any of these are truly under the radar, but these are ones I'm quite excited about. And the first is the Charlie Appleby trained Noble Style. You noted him earlier. He would have gone into everyone's notebooks after all Bank and Royal Scotsman. They were well beaten that day. He did pick up a electric, which brought him back to the track at the end of July for a small little novice race. And under a penalty, although it was a scrap, wasn't fully tuned for the race. And I expect a much better performance next time out. Now, where that next time out might be, it could be the gym. But I also think he could be a national stakes horse. I would love to see Little Big Bear and Noble Style take on each other. I'm personally really excited about this one. Again, he might be a Guineas horse, or he might be a Commonwealth Cup horse. I purchased both of them already at 25s and 20s. I was pretty happy with that. I think he's going to be up there with the best of the two-year-olds. Would you like me to roll on and speak the rest of them?
Well, absolutely. Yeah, that's a very intriguing one, though. And especially when Oisin talks him up earlier in the season on the pod, with the view to going for the Coventry. And obviously that didn't happen, but he remains of significant interest, particularly seeing as he went on to Newmarket and win. So definitely on the list. Right, who else have you got for us?
The next is the Chesham winner, Holloway Boy. Again, not under the radar, but I think people might overlook him a little. He was a massive frame to fit. We'll call his Chesham win a bit of a fluke, or say the field was weak. And then you come back to the fact he was beaten at a short price. And just looking at him, I just didn't think a track like Goodwood would really suit him. And maybe he's more of a Newbury or a Haydock horse. But yeah, Holloway Boy, I wouldn't forget about him just yet. I think he could win races again this season. The last horse on my list is Commissioning. And this one just blew me away on debut. It looked like a fair novice heading into it, with my eyes being drawn to the Kingman filly Propense. That was the horse I looked at pre-race, sorry. And she did run nicely, but she was pretty clueless. But the attention afterwards, it has to go to the winner. Big green horse. And Frankie Dettori said he gave her one flick and she just shifted. I believe the plan is to get her up to a mile already this season. So she must already extend even further than that as a three-year-old. I think all three of those could be ones for group races this season.
Okay. So give us those three names again.
Noble Style for Charlie Appleby. You had Holloway Boy for Carl Burke, and Commissioning for John Gosden.
I like that. I like that a lot. I have three. The first of them is Thornbrook for Joseph O'Brien. Has had one start so far, is very well entered up. That was at Leopardstown. I really like that performance. Won by a length and a quarter that day. She's beautifully bred. She's from the first crop of Saxon Warrior out of a Danehill Dancer mare. And Joseph has given her entries in the Futurity Stakes, the Debutante, the Moigler Stud, and the Filly's Mile. So I'm very intrigued to see where she goes.
You must really like this one, because that's back-to-back podcasts that horse has come out of your mouth.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Got to mention with Elena as well. Now, I really like that performance. I was very taken with it. And I think she's going to go far. Cue her getting beaten 50 lengths down her next start. Let's see how that plays out. His brother has got Proud and Regal for Coolmore. A Galileo out of a Danehill mare. Obviously, we were talking about the fact that Galileo is currently 44th on the sires list, which is not exactly what you would be expecting of Galileo, but it just... I think he's on $3 million in prize money, but the performances Ooh. Aren't really there. Yeah, it's a bit nuts to see him down that far. I remember looking at it on TDN on the sires list, and going, hang on a second, have I clicked something else here? Like, have I missed him? Was he there in the top 10 and I didn't see it? And there he was at 44. You just don't expect that with Galileo. But Proud and Regal has won. He was a surprise winner at the Curragh, 16-1 shot. And then Gavin Ryan was on board when he beat Helsing on his second start. And there didn't seem to be an awful lot of market confidence in him that day either. That was in the Group 3 company. He beat the Jarlines horse, Helsing. I know the Jarlines thinks quite a bit of him. I was paying a lot of attention to that race because I was very intrigued in Age of Kings. And again, he came up short. And I wonder if it's just a case of Proud and Regal is so much better. And he doesn't, I haven't seen a whole lot said about him. And he's incredibly well entered up. Futurity Stakes, that Group 2 Juvenile Race and Irish Champions Weekend, the Vincent O'Brien National Stakes, the Royal Lodge, and the Dewhurst as well. So he's got all the right entries. He's also got a Derby entry, but that doesn't count. And speaking of horses who may very well be Derby prospects, I mean, this one is blatantly obvious. He cost €440,000 as a yearling and absolutely bolted up on debut and then buried Ryan Moore into the turf as he was trying to pull him up. And that's Denmark, who also has got all the right entries. They've put him in that race on Irish Champions Weekend as well, the KPMG Champions Juvenile Race. Wasn't always a race that Coolmore were interested in, but they certainly are these days. The Royal Lodge and the Dewhurst, as well as the Futurity Stakes as well. And he has an entry in the National Stakes role that it would be unlikely he will take that engagement up. He's a Camelot out of Board Meeting, beautifully bred. That performance, he did wear a tongue tie on debut, which was a bit of a concern to me, but that performance was really breathtaking. And Denmark is very interesting.
Just a little one on Denmark. He's a big strapping horse, but he was very green that first time out. And yeah. I was reading the post-race comments. You could tell it was first day of school for him almost. They'll be playing the long game with him. He looks like a Derby horse. I would just like to see him stick his head down next time. He launched his head up into the air. I'd like to see him really, really run through the line.
It was an unusual head carriage to see on a horse that would be given, like, they won't have, as you said, the gun won't have been to his head, but it was unusual to see him. He kind of swished the tail a little bit as well. But he's run all the way to the line for all that his head did weave and bob about a fair old bit. And look, Aidan O'Brien's on record as saying that it's not like they're not trying to win first time out, but there is an advantage to getting beaten on your debut, because instead of having to be thrust into listed company or group company where you're having to be really thrown in at the deep end, you have the opportunity to go for another maiden and learn a bit more. And he's run away from them in the end. Now, what he's beaten, I have no idea. I have no clue how good Warrior Lion and View Token are. But he couldn't have done it any more impressively than he did. And he's very, very intriguing. And interesting to hear you say, but he's got to be a big Derby prospect. I'd be disappointed if he's not in the Vertum Futurity at the end of the year. If he doesn't make it to that level this season, that would be disappointing.
I feel like we'll be seeing a more polished performance, if not next time out, then the time afterwards. As you said, racing will definitely improve this horse, and I'm excited as well. Definitely one for later on this year.
And maybe that's the middle distance prospect in as the middle distance hope, but as that I'm going for both Proud and Regal and for Denmark, in that we all want to have a Derby winner on side, but
especially if you can get a fancy price about one.
Exactly, and there is a fancy price available, which is also a nice thing about him. But is it a concern for you that he was wearing a tongue tie in debut?
No, I don't have an issue with that myself. Especially given the way he performed, I wouldn't have deemed that as an issue myself.
Yeah, I think we can sometimes read too much into this, and if he needed a wind up, he would have one. I think it may be an attitude thing, and I don't even mind horses having a bad attitude as long as they're able to win. So let's see how he gets on, but I'm very intrigued to see where he goes next. I'd love to see him in the Futurity. I would be really interested to see him in the Futurity Stakes, and that could very well be where he ends up, but we'll see. Last piece of business is a story that broke on Monday, and seeing as you listen to the podcast between Elena and I, you heard the real-time reaction from both of us to Harry Dunlop retiring or his announcement that he's going to retire at the end of the season. I did tweet out, when are the BHA going to sit up and actually do something about all of this? Which got an interesting number of interesting responses, and it got a few phone calls from people as well who didn't respond to it, but who rang me about it and were like, well, what do you expect the BHA to do? Look, I get it. If someone is not able to attract more than 15 owners, that's not sustainable long term, of course. But there is a major cost of living crisis that just continues to seemingly week on week, seems to just get worse and worse. There is the fiasco with prize money in the UK, and more horses are leaving for North America, be it Canada or the United States itself, not to mention Hong Kong, Australia, Japan, and elsewhere, the Middle East as well, for that matter. And this is, it's sad. It's sad to read. Harry Dunlop is a talented horseman, and this is not the only trainer to retire this year. We're now into multiple trainers who are walking away from the sport, which has got to be a worrying time as well. And there was something that Elena said that I thought was very intriguing. She said that she had heard that the BHA wants to have a certain amount of trainers that they can control. Doesn't mean that that's the case, but it is intriguing to hear that being said. What was your reaction to Harry Dunlop citing economic climate for the decision to stop training at the end of the season?
Yeah, no, I personally don't have too much to add on the subject. It's obviously, it's a bit disappointing when someone retires when they could have had so many more years left in this game. He obviously stated COVID and Brexit is the reasons he's struggling. He used to have lots of runners over in France, which obviously has dried up because he either couldn't get over there because of COVID or the challenge has been made too hard for him through Brexit. I did read that he wanted to remain in the industry, though, which I suppose is a positive, just not as a trainer. So that is good to hear. And I feel like we just need to wish him all the best wherever he goes. And hopefully this isn't the last time we see him.
I was speaking to an assistant trainer a month ago. And obviously, if you're at the assistant trainer level, you would imagine that your ambition is to be a trainer. And so I was saying to him about that, about becoming a trainer. And he said, no, he will remain an assistant trainer. And I said, oh, is it just that you're happy doing that? You're happy working with the boss? And he said, no, I'd love to be a trainer. But in order for me to actually make a proper go of it and make a really good living out of it, I would have to go to America or to France. I have a young family. I'm not uprooting them. But it's not economically viable to be a racehorse trainer in the United Kingdom, certainly starting out. He said, you can't do it. And he said, for that matter, you can't do it in Ireland either. You know, let's not say that everything is rosy over in the garden of Ireland. He said, I wouldn't be able to do it there. I can't do it here. And I'm not moving my kids and my wife to America or France or Hong Kong, even if that offer came. He said, not there. So as long as the boss is happy with me, I'm happy to stay in this role. And that's sad. It's sad that there is a talented individual, doesn't matter what age they are, but that's a talented person who does have the ambition to be a trainer, but knows it's not, it's a risk that is far too great and it wouldn't pay off. And that's where I think the issue with the BHA comes in. It's very easy to say, oh, well, what are the BHA supposed to do? Well, they're the guardians of the sport. They're not just the people who put the rules in place. They're the guardians of the sport. And it's very clear. I mean, this is your first time on the show, but since this show's inception, we've been talking about how disappointing prize money is, how poor prize money is, how more needs to be done with prize money. And eventually, you just have to stop banging your head off the wall and just accept, well, they're not going to do anything. And when the BHA, was it William Haggis wanted to cut 300 fixtures? I don't think that he came up with that number as a coincidence to match the 300 races they were supposed to cancel next year, and then went, actually, we're not going to do that at all. Nah, we won't bother with it. I don't think he came up with 300 fixtures as just a round, nice round number that sounds good. I think it was a very pointed, you think 300 races would make a difference? You need 300 fixtures gone, but you won't even do that. And I don't know if they want to just ride this gravy train and milk it for all it's worth. But if that's what they're going to keep doing, we're not going to stop at Harry Dunlop. This is not the last trainer, and it's a really good point to make. This is not a decision. This is a guy who could have continued as a trainer for years and years. But he has to go now because it's not economically viable to do this. When I'm speaking to a Group 1 winning trainer in William Muir, who very openly, in an interview that I did with him about pile driver running in the King George for TalkSport, said, the only way I can make this work is for me to drive the horse box. And when... Oof. Yeah. And I asked him about the relationship with Chris Garsick and how that came about. And he said, well, he came to me and said that he wanted to be a trainer and he was looking for advice and he was looking for help. And they came up with a plan where he would come in as the joint trainer. He said he wouldn't be able to make it work otherwise. And look, it works out for me. It works out for him. And I'll always try and help somebody who's a decent person if I can. But
we're seeing that become a bit more trendier now. Anyway, we've definitely seen a few more of these joints. Admittedly, most of them are father-son combinations. But maybe that could be a future of racehorse trainers, is these joint licenses being more and more prominent.
Yeah, it may very well have to be. It may be that you've got to combine resources and try and make that work. It's a pity it didn't work out between John Ox and the other young man. That was a real shame that didn't quite land in the manner that we expected it to. I think we all thought, because John Ox had such a rich caliber behind him, and look, it doesn't take from his success, but it was disappointing that didn't continue in the way that it could have. And perhaps should have. But if you're in a situation where a trainer of a multiple Group 1 winner and a very talented trainer in his own right, in William Muir, is saying in an interview, this wasn't like something that he, because I would by no means repeat this if he said, by the way, this is off the record, you're not to say this. Or even if it wasn't in the interview itself, if that wasn't never, I would not say this on the show. I'm just not that kind of person. The fact that it was in the interview means I can say it. He openly said, the only way I can make this work is that I have to drive the horse box. Because horse transportation is so costly that that's the only way he can do that. And you can think of incredibly gifted trainers. I think Elena made the point that there's no substitute for hard work. Or you shouldn't be afraid of hard work. And that's 100% true. But I can think of trainers right now who definitely would not do that. And that's not to take from anybody else. I admire the fact that he does that, and I admire the fact that he spoke about that. He was confident about pile driver, but he didn't know he wasn't absolutely... I'm not talking to him after he's won. And he's saying, look at what I have to do. He's talking about the industry, how tough it is, and the realization that, look, if you want to go and do this... You got to be up first thing in the morning. You've got to oversee all of the lots. You have to do all the work. And then you got to get into the horse box and you got a 5-hour journey. That's your day. That's how it is.
Pit of money.
Yeah. It's a money pit. It is a money pit. So you're doing this for the love of it. And the BHA need to be understanding of that. I think there needs to be a realization that, look, maybe I'm not making the case very, very clear here, but I don't doubt that William Muir is not the only trainer who's doing this, and I don't doubt that there are more concessions being made by trainers as well, and I know for a fact that there are people who have left the industry despite the fact that it was their dream to be a member of a stable staff, to work with horses day in, day out. They've left it to go work in the trade industry because the quality of life and the money that they earn is just better working behind a bar or working in a restaurant than it is working at a stable, for all that they love it. So I don't know how much longer this is sustainable in the UK or in Ireland long term. It really isn't. And what you're seeing more and more, Willow, is the balance of power is ending up in fewer and fewer hands. You know, that's great if you're Aidan O'Brien and Charlie Appleby and Sir Michael Stout, John Gosden, but it's not so great for the rest of the industry. And it doesn't help things. Like, when you see Formula One being constantly won by Lewis Hamilton, and I'm very much aware of the fact that he's not doing that this year, Verstappen is mopping up. But when it's always one driver winning, or one driver with a challenger from a second, that gets very boring. You know, the Premier League was very boring when it was just the one team winning it year in, year out. It gets interesting when there's competition. And we're in a danger of monopolies crushing the sport. And I don't even think these racing empires want to dominate the sport. They obviously all want success, but they expect to meet resistance and they're just not meeting it. So, look, I don't have the answers. That's something that Elena said, that she hates throwing out issues and then not having a solution to it. I don't have the solution to the problems that face British racing, to the prize money issues, to you and I were talking about fixtures beforehand and how there's two nights of Newmarket, 2 days of Newmarket, 89 runners at both. I mean, dear God. Like, it's bad right now.
Mm. That's a premier fixture as well. Like,
yeah.
It's dreadful.
It's not sustainable. And like, I covered racing last week, and one of the races that Lucy and I did had four runners. One of the races that I did with Ade in the social afterwards had three out of five that we covered in total. That's bad. I think the other had six. Another had six. So, and I said it to you off air, so I'll say it here as well. That one of those races had, it was a Friday afternoon at Brighton. There were three horses who had raced on the Wednesday who were coming back out to race again in a six runner field. It's manic. It's absolutely crazy. So, the BHA have to be able to own up to all this. They have to be able to come up with solutions. It's their job to do it. In some ways, it's our job to highlight the issues and them to come along and fix it. But there's no solutions coming from anybody. And when there is a solution put forward by whether it's Saville or William Haggis, it seems as though that just gets no traction whatsoever. It's not listened to. It's not taken on board. It's just, yeah, whatever. We move on. And it's disappointing. It's very disappointing. And the sad thing about all of this is that there's a man who has to walk away from the sport. Look, no one gets handed anything. You got to work for it. I don't think that there's any question about his work ethic. But it is pretty disappointing that the sport is in jeopardy. And I think it is in jeopardy. And one of these days we're going to wake up to a really big trainer walking away from the sport. And that's not to take anything away from Harry Dunlop. He's had terrific success and a tremendous CV, and a CV to be very proud of. But one of these days a huge name is going to be saying, yeah, we can't make this work. And are we supposed to just go, oh, well, if you can't attract the owners? It's not that simple. The governing body has to do more, and I'm not saying I have the answer for it, but I am saying that there's more that can be done. So hopefully we'll see a change sooner rather than later, but I'm not holding that much hope for it. Well, on that delightful bombshell and that feel-good bombshell. Mm-hmm. Oh, la, la, la. It's all great. Everything. Look, what do you want us to do? Lie? Yeah, the whole world is terrific. Everything's fine. Yeah, it's all great. It's going to hell in a handbasket. I've really enjoyed your company this afternoon and very much looking forward to speaking to you on the show again. Dare I ask you, are you more excited about the 2022 renewal of the Arc de Triomphe, or are you more excited about the November Open meeting at the 2022 Cheltenham Festival?
I'd say I'm more interested in a Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe myself. More of a flat man than a jumps man, but that is a conversation for another day.
Well, that is the correct answer, because if your answer is, oh, I can't wait for the November Open meeting, that's the wrong answer, even if you are a hardcore jumps fan. It's the
Arc. I would be the wrong man for this podcast today, that is for sure.
As I give you a list of two-year-olds to follow, Emmett, and then go, oh, I can't wait for the November Open meeting. Yeah. That would have been a trippy answer to give. But listen, looking forward to talking to you again and getting more insight from you. Where can we follow you on Twitter?
Racing Willow on Twitter for me.
And
I'll also plug the YouTube, which is also Racing Willow as well, which I should be becoming more active on very soon.
Excellent. Excellent stuff. So Racing Willow on YouTube and Racing Willow on Twitter. And we'll tag Willow, of course, in the promotional tweet for this very show. Thank you very much for listening. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. Hopefully you found it informative as well. From Willow and I, we'll talk to you again very, very soon on the Final Furlong Podcast. Be safe, be well, God bless.
The Final Furlong Podcast is proudly brought to you by our official betting partner, Kaluki Sportsbook. With betting on all sports, immediate interaction with experienced traders, instant withdrawals, and the best odds guaranteed on UK and Irish horse racing, Kaluki have prominent betting pitches at racecourses across the UK. Join us now at kalukisportsbook.co.uk. And the Final Furlong is brought to you by our official syndicate partner, All About Sunday, the ultimate racehorse ownership experience. Download the app to get involved with world-class trainers, including Henry de Bromhead, Gordon Elliott, and Donald McCain. Join us at allaboutsunday.com.